Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Sky Raiders of Abarax for 5e, Into the Odd Remaster, okay. Side Quest, a pressure relief for Zine Quest,
okay.
And Funcom acquires Cabinet Group. So, yeah, that affects both of us, so we'll find out how that goes.
All right.
We should be receiving cease and desist anytime now. So let's start with the Dragonlance creators are creating a new RPG or new RPG setting using the 5e SRD. SDR.
Sorry, I have to do it. All right, sorry.
So Sky Raiders of Abarax. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, they're describing it. It seems to be using like humanoid panthers, dragonkin, female halfling, two humans, like some image.
Sorry, I love how those are the pull-outs. Like, okay, oh, sorry, you were talking about the image. It's like, here's the races. Humanoid panther, kind of dragon more thing. A woman? You can play now in RPGs. Yeah, sorry.
But she has many racial penalties in this world.
Size, yeah.
All right. So, of course, the creators of Ravenloft and Dragonlance, Tracy and Laura Hickman, as we know, had difficulties with Wizards of the Coast not too long, I guess last year.
Which kind of got resolved, didn't they?
Yeah, they dropped a lawsuit, so something happened behind the scenes. Right. But I don't know what became of the trilogy they were working on. They're working on a new Dragonlance trilogy,
right.
And that was the source of the lawsuit because they stopped getting approvals and basically they just said, yeah, we're not going to pay you anymore.
Is there development hell for books?
It could, yeah, I think so. I think especially with rights-based things like this. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the books are probably finished, but, you know, they may never get edited, may never get approved. Right. And they may just...
So like most of my stuff, it's done. You're just never going to see it.
Right. Yeah. So they are putting their efforts into a new world. So I wonder what the relationship is between those two things. If they're just like, okay, we're done with Dragonlance, but we're going to do this because, we want to stay active. And
I'd have to look at the SRD, but it's kind of like... Anyone can use it as long as you follow these guidelines.
Right.
So even if they've broken stuff with Wizards of the Coast or don't want to do anything to do with them, they could still release this and not have to go through WotC.
So maybe they are because they're names. They're recognized names. They know they can get attention. That's a popular system. So this setting will get attention. And so they're talking about – so dragons and airships basically is what we're looking at. And the thing that they're promoting is the unique living tome system, and they don't elaborate too much on what that means. So that may be just a new way to kind of keep track of the progress of a campaign or something. But they're using the SRD open source, and so kind of following. There have been several, like we talked about the one from the former World of Warcraft guy.
How's that going?
Warchief game, and they did pretty well. They called it a overwhelmingly successful, that Coils of the Serpent, Ouroboros. But that, we won't go into that, but it's good they finished that Kickstarter in time because all of those former Blizzard execs
I didn't make the connection between that and Blizzard.
So they escaped that thing that would have just pulled them under and probably destroyed their reputations in the industry. But that's for another day. Because of successful kind of 5e based Kickstarters, they decided they're going to do this, which means it's going to go to Kickstarter. That was weird because they had that $10 million lawsuit. You know, the damages were $10 million that they were filing against Wizards, and they're still going to be working with them. So, working with that, in the RPG world, using their, like you said, though, it's not, they're not getting approvals. They're not doing anything with,
much as I don't like it. Right.
Yeah. If you want to do something new, I was just kind of questioning. There were a few things that came up. Well, I was looking at virtual tabletops, and that came up. For me, too, it's just like, wow, these are all built to run 5e really well. Yeah, they're all little squares and you're moving your little guys around. I guess, 4e as well. But it really seems like everything is kind of focused at that. So I ran Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, nice.
And, that's more theater of the mind. Right. But it's just like there's all these maps and grids and stuff. I'm like, wow, that's –
Don't need it. It's really – Yeah. But on the other hand, as you said, like, is a virtual tabletop – app or software that doesn't accommodate 5e, are they shooting themselves in the foot?
Right.
Unfortunately, probably yes.
Yeah, because eventually a group will get there or start there. So, Yeah. So I'm curious about how this Kickstarter will do and if this is going to mean we're not ever going to see a Dragonlance official 5e setting or, yeah, what will happen?
Well, I'm sure this, Sky Pirates, Sky Raiders of Abraxas. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it'll do well. As you said, it's got two big names attached to it. It's for compatible with D&D 5e. So that's, yeah, it's probably going to do well. I wonder, because like what got released so far, like you said last time, was just like a snippet of a poem. And then like a poem later, and apart from this picture, we don't really have much about what the setting is.
Yes, yes. Yeah, but if we rely, if we, you know, I guess trusting these creators and wanting to see something new, maybe people will jump on pretty quickly. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah, and always Kickstarters kind of try to flesh stuff out as much as possible to get you tempted. So we will see. Yeah, so, yeah, it's a funny thing that it's following, you know, they're like, okay, we got our little payoff, our under the table non-disclosed payout, and then we're going to keep in this tabletop world, but we're not going to support Wizard. You know, we're we're not going to have to deal with that.
Well, actually, thinking about that, no idea what the Hickmans are going to do, but like we had talked before about, I can't think of it now, but some failed kind of OSR group or something like that. And our thoughts were all you had to do was pump out some like 5e compatible or OSR compatible modules, build up goodwill within the community as like a decent creator, then release your own kind of system and you'd have a built-in audience. Who knows? Maybe this is what the Hickmans are doing. They're like, okay, well, let's make stuff for the most popular currently role-playing game, and we can make a name, not make a name for themselves because they already have one, but then we've got this, and hey, here's Sky Pirates or Sky Raiders of Abraxas or whatever it is as this other system.
Yeah.
And maybe get people come over.
And that also avoids if Wizards, like editorially, would have just butchered what they wanted to do with Dragonlance, then, you know, that this saves them a lot of the, because people have good memories of that old stuff, and now they may have new stuff they can enjoy and not see this weird kind of, you know, revised version that they're not happy with and that maybe players won't be happy with.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Speaking of remasters and new versions of things, Into the Odd is getting remastered. So that's Chris McDowell's game that he's also responsible for Electric Bastion Land.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, that's the most more recent thing that he's done. But this is going to be going to Kickstarter in September of 2021 and basically came from the relationship that they started when McDowell did a adventure for Forbidden Lands.
Okay,
so he'd been working with Free League. They were fans of Into the Odd. And he was then, I think, working also on Electric Bastion Land and didn't realize how many people were still playing Into the Odd, the former game, and kind of credited that to the horror setting and kind of and also the sandbox adventure that was included in the core books that people are still playing that. And, it, you know, came out. It's I don't have the date in front of me, but it came out a while ago. And so that was a motivation to take another look at it, and Free League is encouraging them to do that. And he's going to work together with Johan Noor, who worked on Morkbjörg as the artist. So his his art, is going to be involved. And they said they're going to, with restraint, going to kind of revise and refine some of the mechanics of the original Into the Odd. But yeah, there's still a lot of people, and yeah, crediting it to the kind of horror focus and maybe the fun of that sandbox first adventure.
I was wondering if it was going to be a revision or just a reprint.
Yeah, not a direct reprint. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, or my feeling is, things grow and change and you learn things over time. So, even like as a designer, you're just like, well, okay, at the time, this was great. I've changed or times have changed and let's update that a little bit or here's I know a better way to do that now a little bit and so you don't want to completely have a new version because I think sometimes that scares people off but you're just like okay revision you know and reprint
so this might be a good opportunity and also like to you know probably put more artwork in it if it was done kind of indie on a budget previously so the changes that he mentioned are the deprivation mechanic and arcana are going to be two things they're going to tweak a little bit to kind of fix from the original. And maybe something that he learned with the Electric Bastion Land. But they will include the original Iron Corral, which is the sandbox that everybody enjoyed, and also going to, of course, then support it with more adventures. So that'll pop up on Kickstarter later this month. And we'll see. And it's Free League, so we know it's going to be gorgeous. We know the quality of the production is going to be a, it's going to be a really nice book that they'll produce. No teasing or mentioning about any stretch goals or any kind of premium versions. But yeah, because Free League's involved and the artist involved, we're going to see a very interesting version.
I wonder if I was just thinking kind of personally if you would have to do a stretch goal.
Yeah, no, that's probably true.
Just be like, this is it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to do this, and we get to this point, we can do it. So yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Set your.
Well, if you want to be real, I can't think of the word, but if you want to be real, on it.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, I wonder how pay would work in this one, because a lot of the, like, if it's kind of like a reprint or a revision, there's not going to be a lot of. I mean, there's going to be probably editing or bits are going to be rewritten, but it's not like you're paying writers like we were kind of discussing.
Yeah,
for the Avatar
that's true.
One.
Right.
But
right.
I mean, a stretch goal could be just. I'm paying myself more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder. I wonder. And yeah, and Free League doesn't go insane with the with the bits and bobs and stuff. I mean, they've done in recent, I think the One Ring got like a cloth map of the Shire or something, but not like, you know, an insane amount of stuff. Usually dice.
Yeah,
they do dice.
But I mean, like with their Year Zero engine, I mean, the different color dice is kind of important. Right?
That does make it, yeah. That does
it's make it it's not necessary, but it kind of makes things easier. And so it's kind of like, I see it a bit more of a, here's everything you need to play, rather than here's all these extra little widgets that you don't really need, but we know you want as collecting crazy nerds, right?
Yeah, but look at that all-in pledge level. Don't you want
I fall for that myself. That? I'm like, yeah, let's go all-in.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, I'm curious to see what this is going to look like. And I don't know much about the game, but a horror, you know, inspired kind of... fantasy setting might be fun, especially if it's got the artist. The Mork Bjork artist. But I've been noticing you look a little tense, like there's some pressure, something you've been dealing with. And some relief for that pressure may be coming later this year in November.
Like a hemorrhoids commercial.
Yeah, right. Right. SideQuest is for you. So Indie Initiative Side Quest is going to help try to take some of the focus away from Zine Quest and help designers and developers that were getting kind of buried in the more famous projects and the more prestige projects of Zine Quest get noticed and found. So yeah, Side Quest 2021 is announced. And so February's Zine Quest is something that I think a lot of people, the thing that they said it was happening is people were putting off releasing things and not doing anything because Zine Quest is when you're going to get all the promotion, when everyone's looking to buy zine-based games. And so there needs to be kind of a secondary. There needs to be an additional chance to do that. So it's a month-long time frame. And so it's just basically promoting Kickstarter hosted or basically they're saying it doesn't have to be Kickstarter, any sort of crowdfunding or any way you want to sell this. They're going to promote it. So it'll be all involved in this event. So, yeah, they're not relying particularly on one platform.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but they're saying, so Zine Quest was just smothering the popularity of Zine Quest smothered some of the other releases. It's so successful that many designers wait all year to launch projects. Kickstarter becomes flooded with indie games. The rest of the year, it becomes hard for new designers to promote their zine-sized offerings. Mm-hmm. So Mark Strox said that he hopes that this will vent a little bit of the pressure by offering a second stage for small games. So like a music festival, you've got alternative stages.
Now I'm going to have to go look at this because I forget when Zine Quest started. It's at least three years old because we're up to like Zine Quest 3 or 4. Or
right.
Mm-hmm. And as someone who makes small games, I don't know. Well, Kickstarter is real intimidating. For me, because I don't want to have to deal with all that back end crap, right? But I've still considered it, and just in indie circles, it seems like as the years gone on, I've seen talk about what exactly constitutes a zine, and like, sure, push the envelope. Like, it wasn't necessarily like a purity thing; it was just a kind of a bit more of what this came up in this side quest thing about. Okay, that probably isn't a zine, but you've put it into Zine Quest. Like, no shame, because it gets so much promotion. Yeah, so you kind of, why wouldn't you do it? And you kind of have to do that. But yeah, there's so many of them now.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of seems like a bit more indie is kind of becoming a bit more mainstream, where it's like, hey, now we have these big names kind of jumping in, which isn't a negative, but it does bury the smaller kind of zines, which I think was the intention of Zine Quest, right?
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah, kind of a consorted promotional effort and have people look at stuff that they may have never looked at before. Yeah. But then when you get names in there, and that's what I did the last Zine Quest. I just looked at names that I recognized. This is the next. So it wasn't. I didn't get very far down the list, basically, before I started supporting things.
I'm a bit cynical about if SideQuest takes off, I wonder if the same thing will happen.
It's possible. And then there'll be other quests.
Other quests. Yeah, I was trying to think of the name as well. Yeah.
Huh. Third quest. Yeah, well, they'll just have to kind of keep making. And it may then be that they'll have to kind of, theme it or genre. Like there'll be a fan, this is for fantasy zines, this is for sci-fi, this is for experimental. Like they'll break it up so at least it thins it out a little bit, some kind of artificial way to thin things out. Yeah. But it's a good effort, and I'm glad that, kind of the spirit of, underground comics and, independent music and everything is like following into RPGs, and they're using the tools of today, crowdfunding and stuff, to really help promote people's work that may only be findable on Twitter otherwise. Yeah. So that's good.
That's the only place I am. Yeah. I'm going to have to go look at this because, I don't know. I've thought about producing something. Mm-hmm. I would want it to be done before I actually promote it. It's because I can't work the other way around. But then I look at it and I'm like, wow, this is real intimidating. Mm. But
But you got to take that plunge.
Well, you do eventually. Yeah. But it's also a calculated risk. I don't want to go, whoa, it turns out I can't swim and I'm in the ocean, right? I want to go like, oh, hey, you know what? This kiddie pool ain't so bad. Right?
Yeah. No, definitely. All right. Well, speaking of fish and things swallowing other fish, we've had a big fish eat a bigger fish eat a big fish. So we had Cabinet Group for a while that basically owned the rights for all Robert E. Howard and also a lot of things that were produced by Target Games and things. So the Mutant series, Mutant Year Zero, Mutant Chronicles have all been eaten up or were all managed. They were all managed by Cabinet Group, and they were doing it on a small scale, but they did have some successes. So they worked with Monolith to do the Conan board game. Right. And recent successes have been Conan is now an in-canon Marvel Universe character. So he has a monthly – he's in the Avengers now, Conan.
Well, I mean, okay. Like, I'm not a comic book person, and I'm not like a scoop. Like, I'm not like a Robert E. Howard scholar or anything. But, like, I know, like, the Marvel comics had Conan for a while, like, back in the 80s something like that.
Yeah, they did the Savage Sword of Conan or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Or even, like, I think there was one storyline where he was in like modern day, right? Or like modern day being like the 1980s or whatever, So, okay. It's not like, whoa, this is unprecedented. It's like,
oh yeah, no, they've screwed around with it when they've had the rights kind of go back and forth before. But I am afraid that has inspired kind of this move. The Cabinet Group was like, okay, this is about as far as we can go. We need more capital. We need more investment. Hey, Funcom. So Funcom is a Norwegian company that they actually produced the very first Conan World MMO. Okay. So earlier 2000s, I think they did a decent, appropriately savage kind of MMO. And so they were kind of trusted. They'd been working with Cabinet for a while and shared some. They had several connections. And so when this opportunity came up, they're like, great, this will expand things for us, give us a lot of opportunities to develop stuff. So unfortunately, so Cabinet has now been completely acquired by Funcom. And last year, Funcom was completely acquired by Tencent, the Chinese gaming behemoth. So they are saying Tencent operates on a very hands-off, a very hands-off management way. So they're not anticipating any complications, any things. But they're probably going to encourage things like mobile games and things that they're making money off of. And also the other thing that makes me a little bit worried is Tencent just took a huge blow with that new Chinese law that means everybody under 18 can only game for 3 hours a week. Like they're restricting.
I had not heard about this. Yeah. I do not see how you're going to enforce it.
You have to use real ID When you log into a game or you know, register a mobile game, you have to use a real ID, your actual, like, you know, passport number or whatever they have, because they have the, you know, social credit system. So you are identified. There's no anonymity in Chinese internet. So, they are like heavily. So they had a kind of vague guideline before. Wow. And now they're like, OK, now we're going to ironclad enforce this.
Wow.
So that hit that had to have hit. Even though Tencent is gigantic, that's going to affect them. So I'm worried that's going to make them a little more desperate to let's make some money out of this. Now we've got control of this. This is something new. So,
it's I guess getting back to that law, it's three people under 18, mm-hmm. maximum of 3 hours,
and only on the weekends. 1 hour Friday, 1 hour Saturday, 1 hour Sunday.
Ouch.
Wow. Fun. Sounds fun. Huh? And yeah, so all of that, the whales on mobile games in China that were kids with the parents' credit cards and stuff, those are all gone.
You know?
That income is.
I was trying to think of what it would do if it would encourage there to be like more ads in mobile games. Mm. But that doesn't seem to be the case. It's like, okay, you got your 3 hours, irregardless of what game you're playing.
Right.
So it's not like, yeah, I'm sure people will do it, but it sounds like it might be rather difficult to have multiple IDs to kind of skirt around that.
Yeah.
Right. So,
I think, there probably are going to be people because that seems to be
sure
the way.
Are, yeah.
Yeah. People, you know, navigating around the firewall on the great firewall with VPNs and things. But yeah, it's definitely going to change things, definitely going to restrict things. But this has now created the new IP studio is now called Heroic Signatures. Within Funcom, Heroic Signatures is the brand manager of all of those things that they acquired, including Conan the Barbarian, Mutant Year Zero, Solomon Kane. The list is actually pretty huge. It's like 12 different properties, you know, all Robert E. Howard and maybe like Target Games.
Right. I'll have to go look at this. Does that mean they own the rights to like the character, or like they own the rights to the character within certain media?
Yeah, I'm not sure. They have really been I haven't seen like in the collections like reprints of the old, you know, Conan stories or anything. I haven't ever seen them credited.
Right.
And when it was Paradox, I didn't ever see that. But yeah, games and all kind of like new media, they have the rights on, which leads to a possible in the works, scripts have been written, Conan series for Netflix.
Well,
so this is the stuff I'm not looking forward to. We did have a previous attempt at a Netflix or at a Conan series on Amazon Prime that when they changed CEOs, the new woman CEO said, no, I'm not interested in this boy's crap. So they killed that real quick. So this is a second attempt to do that. And we don't know like who all is involved,
right.
But there are scripts written. And so Friedrich Melberg who was the co-founder and CEO of Cabinet Group is very optimistic about this. It's really going to kind of expand the visibility of a lot of these properties and give them the ability to get into new media, which I'm afraid is just going to mean mobile games like crazy. We're going to have every Robert E. Howard character and some
that would
horrible. So this is all based on the success that they've had with licensing deals with Penguin, Random House, Panini, Titan Books, and Monolith. So they've done a Solomon Kane and two Conan board games.
I just think a Solomon Kane game would be like, okay, because like Conan's kind of like, okay, part of the reason I like Conan,
mm-hmm.
Conan's an asshole,
mm-hmm.
but he kind of knows it, right?
Like
he's like, yeah. And like one of the stories, I mean, like I said, I've talked about this before. One of the stories, he actually openly admits to being caught and tossed in jail because he was so drunk, he ran into a fucking door jam and the police caught him. And he's like, well, my bad, right? And like he's that kind of like asshole idiot where you're just like, yeah, like he can kind of make fun of himself. I don't think Solomon Kane is that. Solomon Kane is like some like darker, even more puritanical.
Yes.
What would a mobile game of that be?
Well, the board game is interesting because you don't play Solomon Kane.
Okay, good.
You play the virtues. And so he's in these situations and you have to like kind of use different resources and be like, no, you.
This way. Yeah. Right. That's interesting.
Please resist your greed, resist your lust and go this way.
Well, yeah, I know you're super xenophobic, but whoa. Hey, temperance or tolerance. Let's go this way. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is a really interesting take. And because also there isn't so many, like the Conan universe has a lot of like compatriots and you know, companions that Conan can play with. That setting doesn't as much. So it made sense to make him the focus, but he's just this pawn that, you know, that his faith is like pushing. And that kind of takes, because you know that he could definitely make mistakes. You can lose the game by him being too righteous and too willing to sacrifice all.
I actually kind of want to check that heretics out now, because that sounds like a pretty.
I happen to have a copy of that game.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So we can take a look at that. Yeah. I just finished doing some 360 kind of videos of the miniatures, because because the Virtues are like these like 54 centimeter or millimeter miniatures that a really nice detail, and they're doing that really rigid plastic now, so swords are straight and halos are not crooked.
You don't have to like bend it back like WizKids pre-painted junk,
right?
Sorry, stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So
did I mention we're never going to get a sponsorship for anything at any time ever? Yeah.
Talking smack on WizKids. I can't believe it. They're new paints. We could have tried their
new
paints.
We could have had a copy of their paints. Yeah. We couldn't
have. Yeah. So I'm worried that means, though, that they're going to be going to bigger game producers. Like the next game license will go to CMON or Come On Games or Hasbro or something instead of a good developer like Monolith. I mean, people's opinions.
Well, one upside to that would be possibly access to at least a more robust distribution, manufacturing distribution line.
Because
from what I hear, just like chatter on the internet, like supply lines are just like, and stuff are just like messed up and they're just going to get worse. So,
Yeah, that's true. Access to better production and when the scale, I think we talked about that with somebody was talking about how they were pretty confident.
I think
that
it was the Avatar.
Yeah, the Avatar.
That's right.
Yeah. As soon as they scaled up, they're like, we're not going to have any problems because we're dealing in quantities that are going to make people pay attention.
This whole forest in the Amazon is ours for paper, right? They don't have to like worry about it. Yeah.
We call that area Avatar Legends. Yeah, so but we may both be receiving cease and desist notices for various projects we're working on, based on how they're going to handle these IPs when this handover happens. Yeah, so we'll see how this changes.
I'm not expecting that to happen. If it does, I'll just have to adopt another character.
Yeah, right.
Public domain. Yeah, John Carter's a real asshole. I haven't read any Tarzan stuff, actually. I don't imagine he's much better.
Right. Yeah, so we'll see. I don't know. That it sounds like real bad news for me. Anytime I hear Tencent, and they literally have their tendrils in everything. I think I forget what the number is, but at least like half of the American gaming industry is partially owned by Tencent.
Do you think we're going to see? I guess it's a bit off topic. We're still gaming related. Do you think we're going to see some kind of like bubble burst eventually?
It depends on the Chinese economy. Yeah, if the Chinese economy goes down, I think we're going to see board games. They didn't learn their lesson from COVID, so they're not going to start domestic production. And in fact, companies like Games Workshop are leaning into Chinese production. Right. All of the books that they're doing now, the ridiculous softcover, like overpriced, like I think they're almost $70 in Japan.
GW.
Yeah, but they're produced in China now. So I could justify when I saw that, Great Britain, when I saw that, I was like, okay, well, at least we know that it's, produced domestically. Who's employed at these, at these print companies. And now we don't even know, what it's CNC in China or whatever that is, and they're moving. That's the direction they're moving. The only thing that might be the bright side of that is we can just get scalpers things from China will send directly, so we can get around this ridiculous idiot tax that Games Workshop is putting on Japan and just order stuff directly from China because Chinese eBayers are very aggressive.
Just thinking about how mobile gaming is going to, or gaming is online gaming is going to be capped. I wonder what, if any, effect that will have on other types of gaming.
Right. Yeah, I don't know the situation with game cafes or anything, or what the board game, because the last research I did remember, we were talking about the Chinese translation of Shadow of the Demon Lord. They haven't had a new version of Dungeons and Dragons for a while. They've just been only unofficial translations and support in China. So Yeah, I didn't hear anything really robust about the tabletop scene, but that would be great.
It would be just kind of interesting, at least where it's like, okay, online game is capped. What else are we going to do?
And then
I guess, I mean, kind of at the, I mean, this is armchair quarterback and kind of at the wrong time, what with not really being able to meet in person to play like board games or card games or other kind of stuff like that. But like, let's hope the pandemic ends. And when it does, right? Like, okay, well, what are we going to do instead? We could play these other types of games. And like you were talking about, okay, people excited for that Chinese translation of Shadow of the Demon Lord. If this does happen, would stuff start filtering over to us and kind of like imagine what that would look like?
Oh, yeah. Because
we've talked again before about how like Nordic countries kind of had their own little RPG microcosm that we're only now starting to see filter over to us.
So. Yeah, that would be really, really
cool. Of
course,
this is like 20 years out.
Yeah, I mean, we did see some of that, at least in like a video game development and stuff from like Taiwan and Hong Kong started to have a lot of Chinese, you know, culture and history and things in their games. But yeah, that slowed down significantly. So yeah, we'll see. And that would be a fun, that'd be a fun thing to watch develop, because I think the focus, just like Chinese science fiction has such a different focus from like Western based science fiction. I really would love to see what they would do. Yeah. With tabletop settings and mechanics and things.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But we'll have to wait. We'll have to be much older before we actually. But that might be great for like our kids to have a really diverse number of systems
and
so a bunch of new voices kind of installed, and things like India, like I'm really curious what as their economy develops, like if there's any movement in tabletop or anything there. So yeah, there's new markets that could be opening and new creators.
Something else that I'm going to have to look into with that side quest, I guess, jumping back, what are you talking about? India reminded me, I hadn't really thought about it before. I don't think about it until I've started like expanding my social network. Certain countries just can't use Kickstarter.
Oh, right. Yes.
Right.
Yes,
which means just like, unless you get someone in a country who can to sponsor you, like, so you're off of something like ZineQuest,
which
means like a platform that's supposed to enable kind of everyone and have these all the kind of diverse voices. Well, you just don't, right? And that's maybe not necessarily Kickstarter's fault. Just kind of sometimes it's banking stuff.
Yeah,
I wonder what the side quests. Maybe that's why they didn't lock themselves into a specific crowdfunding platform. Just okay, something. But I want to go look, because that is one way to increase the diversity in games, right? Just like, here's a little, you know, a kind of a project or a promotion that you wouldn't otherwise have seen, thanks to SideQuest.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I forgot that there are just so many just like completely off limits. I think even Russia is like not. I've seen so many Kickstarter projects that we don't serve, Russia or a lot of the former Soviet states. So yeah, that does take a lot of customer base away, and also eliminates a lot of opportunity unless you're going to take that risk of we're going to find someone in North America that's going to get all of our money and hope that he wires it to us. That's a good point. And and it'll just be, I mean, they just have to develop that themselves, then basically have to come up with their own crowdfunding and relationships with a banking, which can't be fun.
That's the other thing that's kind of kept me off or doing a Kickstarter project, is I'd probably have to like employ like my brother or something to do all the packaging and shipping, because the last thing I want to do is have all the stuff shipped to Japan and then ship it back out again, right? Because I mean, English language, most of my customers or people interested would be Western. I'm just like,
That's a huge.
No one wants to pay for double shipping, which that's probably why.
So we'll print it in Asia, then ship it to Japan, then ship it back into that would be beautiful. Yeah.
Or something print on demand only, right?
Yeah. And I've seen that a lot. There's been a lot more recently. They're just like North America only, because shipping is just out of control. So yeah, I've had to rely on like forwarding services and family members
about I think Evil Hat kind of does that. As much as you like their fate stuff, I'm like, I get it. You also like, you can't predict what international shipping is going to be a year or two when this thing is finally ready. So you're just going to like, we can't do it.
Yeah.
Sorry. So like, it sucks for us and people like us, but I also understand why a company would be like,
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
We're only doing this. Sorry.
It's a huge risk. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right, because the timetable shifts as things, and it's just like, oh, well, shipping was $100,000 less last year, and now we're dealing
with
this.
So all that money you thought we made?
Right.
We got to do a Kickstarter just to ship this stuff to you.
That's right. Yeah, that's definitely happened too. And you just can't do that. You can't double dip and say, guess what, guys? If you really want this, you'll have to pay for it again. All right. Well, where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's HiveMind, HiveMynd, where I'm doing another one of my massive Twitter threads about the war game development.
Oh.
Because it turns out changing to tokens.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to eliminate bookkeeping of having units either be healthy or wounded or off the board creates a whole bunch of design problems about how to show units of different quality and reducing die rolls as much as possible. Like, you don't want to, like, roll to hit, then roll an armor save, then roll to see if people flee or something like that. So I've really tried to compress that, and I think I'm solving it.
Ooh.
But my Twitter threads are absolutely huge.
Okay, nice.
So, yeah. So if you want to go see that, there you go. HiveMind, HiveMynd.
Nice.
Where can people find you?
You can see me drawing a cartoon weekly. So abuse cartoons on both YouTube and Twitch. I do my domestic abuse cartoon. You can see the archive for that cartoon at gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And I just use that live stream to draw the cartoon and eat weird things from a convenience store. And last week was steak and coffee flavored potato chips.
How were they?
Terrible.
Oh, damn.
Really bad.
Because I was mildly interested.
Yeah, it's like it was like a weird, like dry rub barbecue flavor. Okay. And then coffee, like the bitterness of coffee aftertaste. And like mixed with the greasiness of potato chips. It's like, this is a horrible. When you open the bag, it smelled like you know.
Instant coffee?
No, that's just like something in your sink. Like you had an old coffee filter. You know, you had like the previous night's dinner, an old coffee filter, and a bunch of stuff. I was just like, whoa, okay, this is not going to be good.
Yikes. I was going to say, yeah, getting my lunch on the way over. Japan has no room to complain about other countries' foods when a hot dog bun filled with fried noodles passes for a sandwich right? The yakisoba sandwich is like, okay, it's fine. You just have no room to talk about other countries' foods.
Right, yeah. It's like a spaghetti burger. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that happens. That happens every week, and I try to find the weirdest stuff possible to try that doesn't, like, you know, make me physically sick on
the weirdest stuff. That's, I would still consider eating, and it's still food. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so check that out, abusecartoons.com. And if you'd like to support this live stream and podcast, please consider going to Upturn Table. We've got all of our content on there, including a way to subscribe to the podcast version of this, a way to see it both on Twitch and YouTube. And so if you subscribe to this YouTube channel, you'll be able to see it, get notifications and see when we're live. The archives of everything go up there. And if you'd like to support what we're doing and become a weakling, please visit patreon.com/upturntable.
Just don't tell Conan, because Conan absolutely despises weaklings. Yeah,
that's right. So
broke Jeremy.
We have to have another. Yeah, we have to have another level for the anti-weakling Conan supporter. Only the strong. All right. So that's it for this week. We'll be back again next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.